Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So National Signing Day is 1 week from today. For the most part, though, for Georgia and the rest of the major programs around college football, the serious work has kind of already been done. Georgia does have a couple of big-time, high-profile commits, Cedric Von Prahn and Broderick Jones, who are expected to sign next Wednesday. By the way, more on Jones in a moment on that front. But for the most part, the complexion of the classes are kind of put together. And I got to say, it may end up being that Georgia won't be number one in recruiting this year, and we still don't know what's going to happen with Zach Evans. More on him in a minute, I guess, too. We don't have finality on anything like that, but as Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, was pointing out in the forum yesterday, forum.dognation.com, you can get that message board for free and stay up to date happening with everything with UGA recruiting. I think the final number is, and that the re-ranking was yesterday, and you can read a good story about this at dognation.com about where the Georgia signees kind of rank on as a the 24/7 sports composite. I think it ends up with Georgia with like 10 of the top 60 players in the country. When you compare that to Clemson, Alabama, the other two teams kind of near the top, when it comes to really collecting elite players for this upcoming class, Georgia has really done for itself pretty well. And with that in mind, I think it's also fair to say that when you look at where Georgia has needs for the upcoming season, when you look at how the guys that Georgia has recruited and signed potentially fill those needs, this is a program right now in need of some impact from some of these guys. And a few of these recruits, now they're all talented, they're all, you know, for the most part, near the top of their position, but just given the circumstances, there are a few who I think have an even bigger opportunity than maybe normal to really make an impact for Georgia this upcoming season. In fact, there are five names I want to highlight here. Now, if you did your list might look a little different than mine. That's totally fine. It's one of the reasons why we interact together, whether on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily, or in the comment section, or anything else. But I've chosen five, and I'll kind of give you my specific reason for doing that. Let me start with receiver. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, unless you've been living in outer space, you know what a big issue that is for Georgia for this upcoming year. And Kirby Smart did talk about that. You know, going back in December, the early signing period, he talked about the need to go out and get receivers. One of the reasons why Georgia signed four of them, and they all bring various things to the table, and Georgia worked really hard to use recruiting to address what had been a kind of a major Achilles heel, at least in terms of overall performance, a major Achilles heel for Georgia on the field. They tried to answer that with December signing day, bring in a bunch of guys. Here is what Kirby Smart said about them then.
Really excited about those guys. I mean, we've been excited about Justin for a long time. Marcus, too. They both came to our camp over the summer and were as competitive of kids as you've seen out there in one-on-ones. And both of them had good senior years. I mean, both of them won state championships. Arian's a kid who's got a lot of speed. It's pretty obvious that he can run fast. He wants to be able to run track here, which we've been very open to, and had success with Mecole doing that. So that was a big selling point for him.
So listen, the names he mentions there, Justin Robinson and Marcus Roseme, Arian Smith, at the time that Smart spoke, he couldn't yet speak about Jermaine Burton. His paperwork wasn't official at the time, so he couldn't mention him by name, had to kind of allude to him somewhat cryptically there at the end. But Smart kind of gives you the things that he likes about those guys, the Arian Smith comparison with Mecole Hardman because of the speed, the fact they'd been in on Roseme for a long time, the fact that Justin Robinson was a state champion here in Georgia, hear all that from Smart. Also, a couple of weeks ago here on Dog Nation Daily, we had a chance to go in a little bit more detail on these receivers, what they bring to the table. Our buddy Terrence Edwards himself, a former great receiver at UGA, one of the all-time greats in program history, and also a guy that's worked one-on-one with guys like Burton and guys like Robinson. He went into a bit more detail about what each of these receivers potentially brings to the table for the Dogs. Here's what Terrence had to say about that.
All four of those guys, I've been saying for this whole time, they bring something different to the table. All of them have attributes that is going to lend them to be awesome receivers once they put on the red and black. They just bring something different. Jermaine Burton has the blend of speed and just a pure receiver. Roseme is a Riley Reilly type, a really sure-handed, big-body, great route runner. And then Justin brings the 6'4 receiver that's going to be able to win 50-50 balls. And I've heard through the grapevine that doing early enrollment practice, doing bowl practice, he was making great catches over some of the older guys.
And that's a nice thing to be able to hear about Justin Robinson, the fact that he's already performed well, as Terrence said, during some of those bowl practices and getting ready for the Sugar Bowl. However, if I'm going to kind of cast my lot with one of these guys and put expectations on one of them for the upcoming year, I think for me it's going to be Marcus Roseme. And Roseme was the highest rated of the Georgia receivers, as kind of the final ratings would show. I believe the 24/7 Sports Composite has him as the number 54 player in the country. And that's not really my only reason for taking Roseme over the rest of this group. In a weird way, all three of the other guys have kind of gotten more attention than Roseme as of late. Robinson, because he is the in-state guy. Most of us got a chance to see some highlights from him. We had a chance to have him here in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios. He's the fan favorite because he's the local guy. Arian Smith, because he does have that speed, speed that kind of reminds you of Mecole Hardman. Arian got a lot of attention there late in the process. Jermaine Burton kind of got some attention late in the process too, because he was an LSU commit. Anytime you have a guy that you wrestle away from another major program, it's always kind of fun. Burton also had kind of the viral video where he leapt over the swimming pool. So in a weird way, Burton and Smith and Robinson kind of all got a share of attention that Roseme hasn't gotten. But Roseme's kind of survived all these re-ranks right up there as a very highly rated four-star prospect, clearly one of the best receivers in the country, a part of a major program down there in South Florida, just a real solid guy all the way around. And when you think that Georgia, who needs a major impact from some freshman receiver, now it may get an impact for more than one guy, likely probably will, but maybe for right now, my bet on that might be Roseme, just given the fact that he's just kind of always been this ever-present fixture, has gotten and received good coaching from a major program, kind of sort of remained a highly rated player throughout this entire process. Some of the other guys may have been hurt a little bit by not going through that all-star process towards the end of this cycle, and that's certainly understandable. There's a lot of names you could choose from at the wide receiver spot here for Georgia. I think Roseme seems like an interesting name, for at least for me right now. So when you're thinking major contribution from the receiver position, my first look on this may go towards Roseme, and then some of the other guys I guess we'll kind of speak about there. But that's not the only position that Georgia needs something big from here in 2020. The same thing is true for the offensive line. Back in December, Smart talked about that need to bring in receivers. They wanted to bring in those offensive linemen. And obviously, I've kind of said before that I think the freshman that has the best chance of potentially being a starter at Georgia may be Broderick Jones. Not everyone necessarily agrees with that, but Jones, assuming he signs next Wednesday, I would think he's the guy that has the best chance of being a starter. But it's not Jones I want to talk about right now. It's another guy that Georgia's recently brought in, Tate Ratledge, a guy who had a very high ranking in the final 24/7 Sports Composite, number 37 player overall. This, by almost any estimation, is a truly elite recruit. Now, it could be that Ratledge is not in line to win that starting job at Georgia right from the very beginning. We don't really know how those tackle spots are going to play out as of yet. Ratledge may not be that guy, but his presence in the competition, his presence pushing other guys to be better, I think it's going to really matter here, because there is something that Ratledge has, a little bit of an extra, I don't know what it is, a little spice to him maybe, that even if he doesn't win a starting job this season, the way that he works, the way that he fights, might push the guy who eventually does win that starting spot to be even better than he otherwise would have been. Let me give an example of this. Back in March, Jeff Sintel had a chance to speak to Tate Ratledge about a number of subjects, and one of the things that Ratledge talked about was how he's matured as a player over the course of his high school career. And listen to specifically the mindset that Ratledge has seemed to adopt on that way towards maturity. I got to tell you, whether Ratledge starts for Georgia early in his career or not, Georgia needs some of what Ratledge apparently possesses. Let me give you some audio that proves that point.
2018, me, it was from sophomore year to that year was a lot more maturity. I got to the point where during games I want to physically dominate people and make them where they really don't want to play me again.
I want to physically dominate people and make them where they don't want to play me again. Now, I've talked to some people who've seen Ratledge up close and personal. These are people that I respect. If you knew their names, you'd respect them too. They have told me that this is the way that Tate Ratledge plays. They've seen that with their own eyes. That willingness and desire, to fight you, and I mean that within the boundaries of the rules and within the echo of the whistle, that willingness to do that is something that he has made famous. And Georgia needs more of that. It seems like Tate Ratledge possesses that. Same thing is true on the other side of the ball for a Jalen Carter, who the re-rank process was very kind to. Carter finishes as a composite five-star, and much the same way that, Tate Ratledge on the offensive side of the ball says, hey, I want to fight you. I want to make you not want to play him anymore. It seems like Jalen Carter's got a little bit of that edge himself as a defensive lineman. Now, this audio is not super easy to hear, but our buddy Connor Riley in Orlando for the Under Armour All-American game asked him, hey, do you sort of see yourself potentially filling that Tyler Clark role for Georgia now that Clark's leaving the program and now that you'll be stepping in place of him? And certainly that's what Jalen Carter said, that, yeah, I could see myself doing that. But in terms of making comparisons between himself and other players, Carter says, listen, I'm my own guy when it comes to stuff like that. Once again, a little bit of an edge here from a UGA signee, which I think the program needs for the upcoming season. Here's Jalen Carter.
Tyler Carter's a very good player, and I feel like I come in and play exactly like him or even better.
Do you see like similarities in your game with anyone that's in college right now?
No, sir. My game's different, you know. I don't really look up to, like, other people, like, try to play like them. I just try to play like myself and just do what I could do. Anything they tell me to do, I feel like I can do it and do my best.
So I don't want to compare myself to other players. I want to come in there and do what I do. Whatever the coaches tell me to do, that's what I'm going to do. I could see myself being Tyler Clark. He also adds maybe a little bit better. Maybe a degree of hubris coming from the incoming freshman. Obviously, it's not easy to succeed at the SEC level, but you do want that degree of confidence because that's what it takes, I think, to weather the storm and emerge as a guy who can make a contribution. Georgia needs that on its defensive line for sure, just given all the guys who are departing from the program. Kirby also showed you last year that he's willing to play a freshman. He did that with Trayvon Walker in 2019, did it with Jordan Davis a lot in 2018. Jalen Carter is a slightly different kind of player, but I think he has an opportunity to do very much the same kind of thing here this upcoming season. So if you're following this so far, here are three incoming freshmen who I think can make a major impact this season and who Georgia needs to. I'm going to mention Marcus Rosemead, wide receiver, although there are other names you could mention. I'm going to mention Tate Ratledge at the offensive line spot, although there are other names that you could mention, but I gave you my reasons for why I chose Ratledge. Same thing for Jalen Carter. Now, Carter in particular may be more important than maybe any of the others, with the exception of someone at the wide receiver spot, just because of how much Georgia is losing along the defensive line. But keep your mind on those three names for right now, Carter and Ratledge and Marcus Roseme. Let me add one more name to this list. This may be the most interesting of all because of the position he plays. That's running back Kendall Milton. Now, overall, the re-ranking process wasn't too kind to Milton. I think he dropped down to the nation's number 7 running back. He probably doesn't care about that. He's been on campus in Athens now for a while. He is singularly focused on being a college player. He's no longer worried about what his process was as a recruit. But this is a guy that I believe that Georgia needs because I think the running back position for the Dogs this season may be more unsettled than it has been in a number of years. You can argue that after Nick Chubb and Sony Michel left after the 2017 season, but maybe prior to the Todd Gurley era, do you have to go back to find a year in which we know less about the Georgia running back pecking order than we do right now? I think that Milton's presence is an important one, and back in December when Milton made it official and signed, Kirby Smart did talk a little bit about what he thought that Milton brought to the table and why it was that Kendall wanted to be at Georgia. Let me give you Kirby here as a reminder.
Kendall was attracted to the fact that he knew he had potential of two guys leaving. You know, with Harrion being a graduate, being a senior, and then with the likelihood of Swift possibly coming out, I mean, he's sitting there going, you know what, there's an opportunity there. And I think any time when you look at it as a running back and you say they could be losing two guys, very similar to years past when we had Sony and Nick, you're always exploring those options. And we certainly thought that Kendall comes from a really strong family. Dale formed a great relationship with their family, and they came and visited all the schools across the Southeast and really liked what Georgia had to offer. So I'm super pleased to get him. He was one of our leaders in the class, and I'm excited about what he's going to bring to the table.
There is a specific reason why I play that audio clip, because very much the same way that I think that Tate Ratledge brings that fight to Georgia that it needs, Jalen Carter brings that kind of edgy confidence that I think that Georgia needs, these are personality traits that the freshman class can provide. When you hear Smart describe the decision-making process that Kendall Milton went to, coming to Georgia likely because he knew that DeAndre Swift was going to be gone, this is a guy that I think maybe it's wrong to say he craves the spotlight, but it's a guy who says, I am comfortable in that spotlight. Running back at Georgia for a school that thinks of itself as RBU, that's a pretty high-profile spot to be in, and Milton does not seem to be uncomfortable with those extra eyeballs on him. You have to have that personality trait if you're going to come to a place like Georgia and succeed. So if you're making a list of players who can make a freshman impact at Georgia and players that I think Georgia needs an impact from, I think Milton is on this list. A lot of years we think of incoming freshman running backs as being kind of a luxury, kind of a nice thing to add to what Georgia already does have. But there's a little bit of uncertainty with that running back situation at UGA this year. You may need a freshman contribution. The great news is that Milton may be the kind of prospect who can provide that. So think about Kendall Milton. Think about Jalen Carter. Think about Tate Ratledge. Think about Marcus Roseme. They won't be the only guys from their position group who have success as freshmen, but they are guys who I have on my mind today. This is still a very deep and talented Georgia roster, but you need freshman contributions. Those four that I just mentioned may be the most likely to provide that. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Went a little long there and talking about the freshmen. A lot we try to cover on a day like this, so we'll see if we can pick up the pace here a little bit right now. By the way, a couple names you didn't really hear me mention right there. Darnell Washington, for me, I'm a little bit still unsure of exactly what the tight end role is going to be in a new Todd Monken offense. That's why he didn't make that list for me, at least for right now. Keely Ringo, obviously it'd be great to have a Derek Stingley type impact the way that the freshman defensive back provided that for LSU last year. But the fact is, Georgia's still pretty deep at the defensive back position here for this year. So those are some of the names that maybe just kind of missed that cut for me. But as I said before, your mileage may vary in terms of your own list of the guys most likely to be impact players as freshmen. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that on video 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Radio Noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us. And we really appreciate our friends at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort making it all possible here today. Two great locations to get to, both less than a three-hour drive from Atlanta. Whether it's the original property, Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, or Harrah's Cherokee Valley River, a great gaming area. All the casino games you've come to know and love, they have them there. Also, tremendous accommodations as well. You know, Harrah's Cherokee Valley River has a 300-room hotel. Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort has more than 1,100 rooms, 10 dining options, spa, everything else. It is all an incredible, incredible experience. And coming soon, the book, Sports Gaming is Coming to the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort properties. If you're watching on video, you can see the website to go to on your screen there. If you are listening, simply do this. Search Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, the book, sports book, and you can find out all about that when you can start placing your own sports bets right there at the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort properties. It's great to have them with us here on Dog Nation Daily. We're going to get Mike Griffith coming up in a couple of minutes. I'm running a little bit late on that. Let me go around the doghouse before we get there, though. I thought that Jeff Sintel, our Dog Nation recruiting insider, had a very interesting story up at DogNation.com yesterday, looking at the process for five-star offensive lineman Broderick Jones, who may be, of all the Georgia freshmen, the most likely to start for this upcoming season. I didn't mention him off the top of the program, I guess, partially because he is not yet signed, and I think that Tate Ratledge deserves a little bit of an attention, too. But Jones is a very, very key player for Georgia the rest of the way. Visited Georgia this past weekend. All indications are it went well, and yet there is the looming cloud, at least for many fans, of the upcoming scheduled visit to Auburn. Thought that Jeff Sintel gave us, I don't know if you call this a prediction or just a piece of analysis, but when it comes to Jones, I hope you read the full story for yourself at DogNation.com, but here is a little bit from Jeff on that. He says about Broderick Jones, a lot's being made about the threat that Auburn poses to Georgia this weekend with that last official. I'm not in the crystal ball business, but that's never really felt tangible. This is Jeff Sintel here I'm quoting from. Especially since his week at the Under Armour All-American game, anything can happen with these young men, but I'm not so certain that Auburn is the top threat to his Georgia commitment. Sam Pittman in Arkansas might be closer to threatening Auburn as the number two school than the Tigers are to overtaking UGA. Once again, that is from a story, Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com. That is about as clear as it can be that Jeff doesn't think that Georgia has anything to worry about with Broderick Jones. So, obviously, for many UGA fans, when the ink is on the letter of intent, that's when they'll truly feel good about all of this. But you can't be more clear about that than Jeff Sintel was. All right, it's Dog Nation Daily presented by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Later on, A former Georgia quarterback shared some really good news this week. I'm going to take a moment to kind of celebrate that. We shall chat about that. Also, some interesting goings on around the SEC, a little bit more on Zach Evans that we will touch on. But for now, for more on Georgia on the field, the preparations for spring practice, we now know that G-Day is going to be April 18th. We know some of the key figures who are going to be going through that spring practice for UGA, and we're still awaiting some news on one final coaching hire. At least we think it's going to be one final coaching hire. We'll cover all that and more with our buddy Mike Griffith. It is so good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Went a little long there out the top of the program, but we'll keep it moving here with Mike right now. It's great to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith, sorry for going to you a little late here today, but nonetheless, glad to have you with us as a part of the program and a lot that I want to speak to you about. Mike, hope you're doing well, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah, thanks, BA.
So let me start with the Jamie Newman stuff, and we kind of talked a good bit about this with Connor Riley yesterday. Obviously, it's a little eye-opening when you see pretty high Heisman odds for him. And you know, there's been a lot written about him. This is, to me, just kind of the byproduct of being the Georgia quarterback. I don't believe that Newman's likely to be a Heisman contender at UGA. I understand why his odds are what they are. It's more of a placeholder for the position than it is an evaluation of the player. But with all that in mind, do you think there's too much hype around Jamie Newman right now?
You know, I don't, because I think Georgia's a national championship contender, and I think he's the favorite to win the job. I think you make a great point, though, when you use the word placeholder, because last year Jake Fromm was considered a Heisman Trophy favorite at the start of the year, and I think we all knew that with that depleted receiving core, even before everybody got hurt, that Jake wasn't going to put up Heisman Trophy numbers. But if you go undefeated in the SEC, you got a chance to win a Heisman Trophy if you're a quarterback or a breadwinning runner, like maybe if DeAndre Swift's numbers had been a little bit better and Georgia being defeated. So I think you used the right word, DA, placeholder. Certainly applies.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where I completely agree with you that this is more about quarterback at Georgia for a team that's going to be in the preseason top 10 and everything like that. You're going to get a lot of attention no matter who you are, Newman included. I guess the one thing I do think is interesting about Newman is if Georgia was ever going to go into a season not quite knowing what it has at quarterback, and there are plenty of people who can say, hey, here's what Jamie Newman did really well at Wake Forest. There are other people who can say, but yeah, but what about at the end of the season when this happened and that happened and that happened? You know, no matter which point you want to make, it seems like Newman has some stats that can help you make that. I think if Georgia was ever going to go into a year not exactly knowing what it has at quarterback, I think given the rest of the quarterback situation on the SEC, this is as good a time as any to do that. Because speaking as a fan here for a moment, I'm certainly not trading Jamie Newman for Mac Jones. Jones played well at times for Alabama, but I don't know that Jones is much more of a known commodity on the basis of a little bit of football. Same thing for Bo Nix at Auburn. Gus Malzahn loves him. I don't know that I've seen enough to feel anywhere close to the way about Jones, or I should say Nix, that Malzahn does there at Auburn. Miles Brennan's a total unknown at LSU, and frankly, a little bit of a surprise. That may be who they have to turn to. Florida fans will rave about Kyle Trask. I'm obviously skeptical about that. So if Newman is a bit of an unknown commodity for Georgia at the quarterback position in the SEC, that is going to be the theme a bit for 2020. There is just a lot of unknown commodities. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I don't know that Georgia's any worse off than any of the other programs I just mentioned.
Oh, I would agree. I would absolutely agree. And, of course, they've got the advantage, BA, having that championship-level defense. So what do you really need to do at quarterback to win? Now, I will say the Todd Monken hire certainly gives us reason to believe that Kirby is going to flip the script a little bit. Now, to what extent, I don't know. And then there's just the whole question of the fourth quarter, and what do you do in the fourth quarter? I mean, let's face it. Two-thirds of Georgia's games are going to be decided before the third quarter ends. So the question is, what do you do in the fourth quarter? Do you keep throwing the football? Do you put up the video game numbers? Because when you do that, BA, you run more plays. And when you run more plays, you risk more guys to injury. That's why Kirby runs the clock. It's not necessarily because he doesn't like to throw or he's afraid. He wants the clock to run because he wants to shrink the games and preserve the health of his players. We've seen a lot of these up-tempo teams kind of fade out. You know, Kevin Sumlin's Texas A&M teams were probably the best example. By the end of the year, they were toast, man, because they were playing 115 snaps a game and other teams were playing 90.
Yeah, but this is where you and I may be on slightly different pages, though, because, I mean, I think that Kirby, by making the moves he's made this offseason, is not trying to defend his previous philosophical decisions. I think he's admitting they didn't work. Now, you can cite examples of up-tempo offenses that did fizzle out. Kevin Sumlin, as you mentioned, at Texas A&M, ended not really being much of a thing here in the SEC. And yet it's also hard not to deny that there are other examples where Georgia just has not been able to keep pace offensively with the nation's best teams. Obviously, LSU in the SEC championship is an example of that. I think that Todd Monken's arrival here at Georgia, now it remains to be seen if Monken's going to have as much of an impact as I think he could have, but Munkin's presence here, just given the fact that philosophically he appears to be so different from Kirby Smart, this is Smart acknowledging, I think, that the way in which they tried to do offense was broken. It wasn't working. It was not going to result in a national championship. Kirby could have rested in his laurels and say, hey, we're winning plenty, things are fine. He chose not to. So I think that you're going to defend Smart's previous play calling decisions from a philosophical standpoint. I think you're defending those more than Smart probably would right now. I think the addition of Munkin is essentially an admission from Smart that we have to do things way differently on offense.
Well, they certainly do with the personnel they have right now, B.A., but when they had Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift, I thought 2017's game plan was fine. But when you don't have receivers that can beat press coverage on the outside, like a Mecole Hardman, like a Riley Ridley, guys that make those safeties pick up a little bit where teams can't press you and stack the box, you're going to have problems. So I think what this is from, hey, Jake Fromm's gone now. I've got a chance to have a mobile quarterback. That adds another offensive guy, makes it that much harder on the defense. Jamie Newman, a guy with a very high rating through Pro Football Scouts on his deep ball, and some talented receiver. You know, in addition to Pickens, and I think Blaylock will be back by the start of fall, Georgia's bringing in three top 75 receivers. So I think what you're going to see is a lot of RPOs and a very simplified pass game. The question that you and I think, really disagree on is tempo. I think we both agree Kirby's going to spread it out and play to the talent that he has. He doesn't have DeAndre Swift and Nick Chubb and Sony Michel in the backfield anymore, so it doesn't make sense to run the ball 60% of the time. But what he does have is a mobile quarterback, and he's starting to build up a talented receiving core, and he's hired a guy in Munkin that knows how to run this air raid. And let's even look beyond Jamie Newman. If we're going to assume he's good, which, you know, we're too soon for that, you know, Carson Beck is a guy that fits very well in this. Dwan Mathis, I'm not sure where Dwan's passing accuracy is going to be, but when you talk about a mobile, strong-armed guy that's 6'6", Ohio State sure thought he was good. So I think Georgia is set up for the future to be a more explosive offensive team. I just think this year, with this championship defense, I don't think Kirby necessarily has to push it as hard as he would if he didn't have a defense that's probably only going to give up more than 20 points in two games all year next year.
Let me follow up on one point about that, and then I want to get ready to talk about the coaching opening that Georgia has with James Coley. And I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. Why is the defense against an elite offense like it saw in LSU? Georgia did not play championship level in that spot in that game. Why are you so sure in the same situation in 2020 that the better offense won't beat the better, you know, the good defense again? You've used that phrase a lot, championship defense, championship defense, championship defense. Obviously, there's a reason to have high expectations for the Georgia defense, but when that, to use your phrase, championship defense saw an elite offense in December, the results weren't good. Why will that be different in 2020?
Well, I think it goes back to what you said at the start of the conversation when you bounced around the league. You know, there's not a Tua. There's not a Joe Burrow. There's not an experienced quarterback in the SEC. If you look at the offenses, you know, a lot of talent is moving on, and it's a cyclical deal. You know, some years the SEC has better offenses than others. But, you know, to talk about Georgia against LSU, I mean, we're talking about a historically good offense, really. And Alabama was too last year, by the way. I don't see that offense out there this year. Now, if you want to reach and look a little further down the road and ask me what happens if they play against Trevor Lawrence, then I could say, okay, well, maybe Clemson, but I'm pretty sure T. Higgins announced he's going pro. ETN's coming back. But this Georgia defense, B.A., to bring back 9 of 11 starters off a defense that finished the year number one in the nation in scoring defense, number one in the nation in rush defense, number three in total defense, number eight in pass. I haven't seen a returning defense this good in the nation in quite some time. And they're going to get a boost. You know, I saw where Ringo's the number one rated corner. I mean, they're already deep there. You got Carter on the D-line coming in. I mean, this defense has a chance, you know, to maybe do some historic things.
It's Mike Griffith here as part of Dog Nation Daily. Let me also remind you this. Coming up at 3 p.m. this afternoon, we have Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. Myself, Jeff Sintel, will do some recruiting talk with you there. Speaking of our friends at Kroger, great deal for you to be aware of. You can try something different for the big game coming up on Sunday. Kroger has wild snow crab clusters on sale for just $8.99 a pound when you use your card. It'll also earn you three times the fuel points, which is a perfect pairing for great savings at Kroger as you get ready for the big game coming up on Sunday. Mike, let's talk about the offensive side of the ball again here for a moment and the coaching opening that we at least assume is going to be filled offensively. I guess it could still be filled by a special teams coach or something along those lines. I have said that I don't know what Kirby Smart's going to do here, but if it were me, I would give the promotion to Buster Faulkner, the guy that you brought in. I think in an offseason where Georgia has chosen to value on-field coaching more so than recruiting prowess, why not take that next step? It certainly seems like Faulkner is an expert in terms of working with quarterbacks. He's had some success as a Group of Five OC. I think he's overqualified to be an analyst. If it were me, knowing that Faulkner's already in the fold, I'd just give him the promotion and have him replace James Coley. There's certainly a chance that Smart won't do that, and certainly he's not that interested in my feelings on this anyway. But if it were me, that is what I would do. What are your thoughts on the now open coaching position now that James Coley's officially gone to Texas A&M?
Well, I would agree with you, B.A. I mean, I you know, but we know how Kirby is. He slow plays everything. And if he already knows that Buster Faulkner is going to get the job, why announce it now? Why not entertain all possibilities? Because realistically, you know, Faulkner could sit there as an analyst and still coach your quarterback. He just would have some restrictions in terms of recruiting and being on the field. But he could still serve a valuable role. I've seen programs that have had a quarterback coach that weren't on field before, and it's been successful. So that's not out of the picture. I would agree with you. I think that's unlikely, though. I mean, Faulkner was making $250,000 as the Southern Miss offensive coordinator. I suppose it's possible he would come and take a $100,000 pay cut to be a part of a championship-caliber staff, knowing that he'd be positioning himself for a very large payday once he did get promoted. And I suppose it's possible Kirby could add another coach and still have Faulkner in the fold, perhaps somebody with some recruiting prowess in South Florida or other parts of the country that George is interested in. But I think your scenario is the most likely. And I think there's a reason Kirby reached for Buster Faulkner. You know, the fact that their paths crossed at Valdosta State means a lot. You know, when you've worked with somebody, you know, you carry on that confidence in them. Great example. You know, I worked with you a few years ago.
Yeah.
It made it that much easier to join the Dog Nation team.
Sure.
Because I knew all about you and we'd work together. I think that Faulkner has that sort of trust, or Kirby has that sort of trust in Faulkner, knowing what he's getting, a guy that he was part of a staff at Valdosta State when Faulkner was the quarterback there.
Let me finish with this. Georgia suffered another bad basketball loss last night. Big lead in Columbia against Missouri. Squandered there at the end. I realize Sevier Wheeler was banged up again for Georgia. Mike, here's my take on this. This, for me, is not a referendum on the Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, because we have seen plenty of examples of the one-and-done player not being the kind of thing that necessarily gets to the NCAA tournament. Once you have a collection of guys like that, sometimes those freshmen just aren't as impactful as we expect them to be sometimes. To me, this is more of a referendum on Tom Crean. I don't know what this ultimately means for him, but the failure of Georgia this season, I lay at Crean's feet a lot more than I lay at Ant-Man's feet. What do you make of that?
Well, I think you got 10 new guys, and I think you opened up with an admittedly brutal schedule. You know, your first six games were against teams that played in the NCAA tournament last year. You played Kentucky twice, and you played at Auburn. You know, I don't think anybody could have reasonably expected Georgia to beat any of those three games. They did get a good quality win against Tennessee at home, and then they lost one against the Ole Miss team that you could argue they should have won at home, and then last night happened. You know, no point guard, and you know, I just thought Ant-Man played his heart out. He played 40 minutes. I think it's more of a referendum on the losing culture that Crean inhibited. And you've got upperclassmen that should be leaders that aren't leaders. And all you got to do is take a look at Rayshon Hammond's stat line. I mean, the guy played 33 minutes, B.A., and he took one shot and didn't score. I mean, that's just, I just can't, that's a top 100 recruit. He's a junior. That's not, no, that's
not knowing how to win. That's the culture that Crane inhibited, that he took over at Georgia, was the worst I had ever seen. It was the least competitive group of seniors I've seen in any sport I've covered my 30-year career last year. It was just a complete indifference to losing. And you still have some upperclassmen. Now, these upperclassmen, they're trying to apply themselves. But as Crane said, this isn't a group that can say been there and done that on the road, because they haven't. They've been losers. And you've got this incoming group of freshmen trying to infuse some energy, trying to learn along the way. And I think they're still learning each other. So, yes, losing a 20-point lead with 13:33 left is certainly a red mark. But I would also tell you that building a 20-point lead on the road in the SEC anywhere tells you that there's potential with this team. And right now they're teetering, and it's going to be up to Tom Crean to keep these young players confident, because the schedule does get softer, and they do have a chance to put some wins together once Sevier Wheeler gets back.
The real shame of all this is, I mean, the fans have really responded. I mean, you know, the games have been sold out. The students have been in line to get in. That's what you hate about this. Someone like myself who wants to, I like college basketball, Mike. I want to see the sport thrive in Athens. And from a ticket standpoint, it seemingly has. The team just hasn't met that with its own level of play. That's the most disappointing part of this to me, is it certainly seems like within the Athens community, you know, more so than the state maybe at large, but within the Athens community, it seems like there has been a buy-in from some fans. You'd love to see that buy-in rewarded by some better play, especially in these winnable games against what, you know, the way I kind of view Missouri and Ole Miss, games that were quite winnable for UGA. Just to see it not really go that way is obviously a huge disappointment.
Boy, I agree. You know, the fans have been great. You know, the number five recruiting class in the country, people have a chance to watch the NBA player. The home games, they've done pretty well. You know, I think they're 9-2. It's just the road has been brutal for this team. You know, I thought Ole Miss was a big game. I think A&M's, I think they're all big games. But what we're really talking about here, the big picture, is can Georgia flip the culture? Because this is a school with zero basketball tradition. This is a school with that's had zero street cred. And you're bringing in a guy that took over an Indiana program that was dead, that had like two scholarship players. And he went on to win two outright Big Ten titles during his tenure, and get Indiana ranked number one. Now, he had tradition to work with there. Can he get it done at Georgia? Can he lock down the best players in the state of Georgia, or enough of them to make Georgia a contender? Can he do what Bruce Pearl did at Auburn? Would be a great example, because Auburn's not a basketball school either. And all I can say is wait and see. I think Tom Crean is a great basketball coach, B.A., but I think he was strapped with a bad culture, and there's just zero size. And when Nick Claxton turned pro, I think we all knew it was going to be really hard for this team to be a tournament team, and they really only have two guys that are 6'9", and that's what's really killing them. That's what hurt in the second half against Missouri. You know, they just aren't able to sustain the rebounds and the big, and Crane's got to keep working on it and find a way. But I was encouraged by Anthony Edwards' performance, and I know it wasn't a great shooting performance, but the guy had 10 rebounds and led the team at 3 assists, and he played all 40 minutes. I mean, let me tell you, playing 40 minutes for a guy that should still be in high school, I mean, he turned 18 in August. This kid's leaving it on the floor, B.A.
Hey, good stuff, Mike. We appreciate your time. Thanks for being here as part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at dognation.com, and then hopefully get a chance to chat with you again very soon as well.
Thanks, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I'll have more coming up on the Georgia basketball loss last night. I'll share a little bit of that before we're done today. Let me kind of transition to some SEC football talk here for a minute as we go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. I want to tell you about one of the great ships in the fleet there for Royal Caribbean. I'm talking about the Odyssey of the Seas. It's going to be a game-changing ship, the first Quantum Ultra-class ship to sail in the U.S. and Europe. Let me give you some of the dates here for Odyssey of the Seas. It's going to be in Fort Lauderdale, fall 2020, and then going from Rome in the summer of 2021. This is a beautiful, beautiful ship loaded with features that you can only find on these Odyssey and Quantum Ultra-class ships. I'm talking about the Ripcord by iFly, which is like a skydiving simulator. North Star, listen to this. It's a jewel-shaped capsule 300 feet in the air with 360-degree views of the surroundings. Can you imagine seeing the ocean from that high up? That kind of just amazing. C-Plex, which is a fun thing with like bumper cars. I mean, the kind of stuff that you get on these Royal Caribbean cruise ships, especially these Quantum Ultra-class ships, is really amazing. All kinds of nightlife and, you know, everything else. Plus, here at Dog Nation, we love the Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. So do me a favor. Reach out to your own travel advisor to book your vacation, or reach out to our friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. You can call them 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. Just please tell them you heard about them right here with us on Dog Nation Daily. All right, couple of things here. So I chatted with Mike Griffith about this during the interview, that I think that Jamie Newman, I've said this before, Newman to me is kind of somewhere in the middle. There are going to be people who cite the Pro Football Focus numbers, even though they have no idea how those are tabulated, about, well, you know, they said he was the third best incoming quarterback in the country for the upcoming season. They're going to have certain people, naysayers maybe, negative types, who are going to cite the fact that late in the season, his last year at Wake Forest, Newman didn't have a very good completion percentage, and the fact that he was the Demon Deacons quarterback at all is a little bit of a blight on him, according to some. I think the truth on Newman is somewhere in the middle. I think he is a capable quarterback. Ultimately, though, this to me is not Jamie Newman's team. This is Todd Monken's team, at least his offense. This is Todd Monken's offense. So the story for Georgia in 2020 is going to be not Jamie Newman playing some sort of Superman role and putting this team on his back. It's going to be Todd Monken creating an offensive philosophy that works. Georgia did Jake Fromm, I believe, a disservice in 2019. Did not give him an offense that works. You can scapegoat and blame the wide receivers for that all you want. Some people are very comfortable putting all the blame on those receivers. But if you watch the games, you know it was more nuanced than that. You know it's more complicated than that. You know, this was about an offensive game plan that just couldn't keep pace with the sharpest minds in the sport. So that's Newman here for Georgia right now, with a chance to be a part of a better philosophy with Todd Monken. As I said to a Mike, it's a nice year in the SEC for that to be true. You know, on yesterday's show, I referenced this article, ESPN.com, all the way to early top 25 teams, the path they could travel to win the national championship. It's really funny, of all the SEC teams on this list, how many of them, quarterback becomes a big part of that. Alabama, preseason number 3 at ESPN. You mentioned Mac Jones in terms of how Alabama overcomes the questions it faces. Number 4, LSU. Huge questions around Miles Brennan. I mean, Miles Brennan's a guy, and I hate to be this way, I never thought that Brennan would take a snap as an SEC starter. I just didn't think he was that kind of player. But that looks like it's going to be who LSU has to turn to. That's a huge question mark. Georgia's situation of having Jamie Newman, from this standpoint, in this particular instance, I think you can say that LSU probably is a little bit envious of Georgia to have a quarterback like Newman who's played a good bit more. Florida at number 7, you may feel good about Kyle Trask. The honest truth is, I'm not quite so sure I'm on the Kyle Trask hype train as much as other people are. Of course, as a Gator hater, I'm sure many of you are not surprised about that. Number 11, Texas A&M, according to ESPN. Same kind of stuff with Kellen Mond. Mond had pretty good numbers, but you saw him in Athens in November. You trading Jamie Newman for Kellen Mond on the basis of what I've seen from him in person, eye to eye? I'm certainly not doing that. As I said before, Gus Malzahn likes Bo Nix. That's ESPN's number 12 team. I'm not trading Jamie Newman for Bo Nix either, even though I thought that Nix did get better over the course of the season. So on and on you can go. Georgia may have some unanswered questions at quarterback, but it's really not that different than anybody else around the SEC right now. So if you're going to have a year where you don't exactly know what you have, in the SEC, 2020 might be the year to do that. I thought that Dennis Dodd had a really interesting piece up at CBSSports.com looking at 6 teams that could be on the rise for this upcoming season. The only SEC team mentioned by Dodd was Kentucky, believe it or not. Let me read this to you real quick because my music's about to end. Dennis Dodd says, the Wildcats are a well-kept secret in their own conference. 17 starters returned from an 8-win team. Mark Stoops pulled off one of his best coaching jobs in succeeding with wide receiver Lynn Bowden Jr. quarterback. The guy he replaced, Terry Wilson, returns from injury. Watch the Cats. The last time they won 18 games in 2 seasons was 1976 and 1977. So here's the thing. I don't have like a huge axe to grind here, but it's amazing to me. The media loves Mark Stoops for whatever reason. And you can say, well, this is the greatest coaching job of Stoops' career, what happened in 2019. The truth is, I think that Bowden, even though he was a converted wide receiver, was a really special player. And the success that Kentucky enjoyed this past season, to me, was almost solely because Bowden was like these once-in-a-generation guys who, in a lot of cases, would not be denied. He actually became a really fun player to watch over the course of the season. And yet, you know, this is treated as a coach of the year type thing for Stoops. You know, Kentucky legitimately had a good team in 2018, also had a home game against Georgia with a chance to clinch the East, and they got blown out of their own stadium. So like I said, this is not a huge axe to grind for me because I don't care that much about Mark Stoops, and I know that you don't either. But it's weird to me how much the media always carries his water as some sort of like, hey, here's the best coach you haven't heard of. I think people have heard of Mark Stoops. They just disregard him because kind of a second-tier SEC program. But nonetheless, a couple other things real quick. We did this yesterday as a part of our Kroger Signing Day Spotlight. So Zach Evans had visited Tennessee this past weekend, and then as a follow-up to that, apparently Jeremy Pruitt tried to see him in Houston when Pruitt was visiting some other folks at Evans' old high school, North Shore High School there. Trey Wallace, good reporter who covers the Tennessee scene, had a few tweets about this. Let me go through these kind of quick. Trey says, Jeremy Pruitt stopped by North Shore in Houston Monday to visit some 2021-2022 guys. He says the Tennessee coaches thought they were going to get an opportunity to meet with Zach Evans' family, but that fell through. Wallace went on to say that, obviously, Evans is not a student there anymore, so they weren't going to visit him at the school. They were going to try to arrange an off-site visit, and Trey Wallace says that he's sure that Tennessee will try again. So if you're looking for the next twist and turn in the Zach Evans recruiting saga, there you have it. May have stood up Jeremy Pruitt, who thought I was going to get a chance to speak to him there for a little bit in Houston. So your guess is as good as mine where this goes with Evans next, but I am entertained by it. I was going to do some stuff on some coaches moving around. Let me just kind of just very quickly mention that Jay Graham is leaving, at least expected to be leaving. I think it's about to be official. A&M as its running backs coach going to Tennessee. I don't know if this is a big impact move or not. I was looking at an A&M message board. They seem to be glad that he's leaving. He is a Tennessee grad, so Tennessee seems to be glad that he's getting him. I don't think this is an impact one way or another on Zach Evans because it doesn't seem like A&M's capable of winning that recruiting battle. So I'm not quite sure what to make of this, but this is another former Vol back in the fold there for Tennessee. We'll do some of these other coaching things coming up a little bit later on. For now, let me make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And before I share some good news with you involving a former Georgia quarterback, let me also share some good news about my friends at Marlowe's Tavern. You know, this is a great time to check out the Marlowe's Tavern closest to you. There's probably one right there in your neighborhood. Chef-inspired food. You know, I love the shrimp and grits. What a great thing to do on kind of a cold night like we've had a lot of these winter nights. Kind of, you know, get inside one of those tavern booths and enjoy some shrimp and grits or the shrimp and crab nachos or the, you know, I've always said I think it's the best burger in the city for sure. I just love the special care and detail that Marlowe's takes with every menu item, including the craft cocktails and everything else. You've heard us brag about it for a long time. Please make sure you check out the Marlowe's Tavern and closes to you. And by the way, tell them that Dog Nation sent you on that as well. You'll have a great time there at Marlowe's. All right, couple loose ends to tie up. Georgia made it official yesterday as expected. It's essentially been assumed that G-Day would be Saturday, April the 18th. That is indeed the case. They also give you an idea of when spring practice is going to begin, right there on St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday, March 17th, and kind of rolling in through April the 18th for G-Day. So we are really not that far away from spring practice. I love the way that we just kind of spin from one thing to the next, and by the time signing day comes around next Wednesday, you'll blink your eye and it's spring practice, and this should be a really fun spring practice for the Dogs. Kendall Milton, some of the names that I mentioned earlier, getting a chance to go through those practices. Jamie Newman, a part of all of that. And just kind of finding out just how different Georgia really will look on the field this upcoming season. So mark your calendar. March 17th, spring practice begins, concludes with G-Day on April the 18th. It'll be here before you know it, and won't that be a lot of fun? One more thing to mention. So the other day, I don't know if we have this photo to show or not, Chase Bryce, the former Clemson quarterback, showed a picture of himself wearing an old school Quincy Carter jersey with kind of the shadow black shadow 17, and it was kind of a cool thing to see. And in seeing that, it made me kind of wonder, you know, I wonder what's up with Quincy Carter. I haven't heard too much from him in kind of a while. Well, it just so happens that Carter tweeted something out this week. I know for so many people who got a chance to hear this, this was such good news. I think we have the tweet to show from Quincy Carter on this. About the fact that he's been clean and sober, he says, for 6 months. So incredible news from Quincy Carter on that front. He mentioned this in light of Kobe Bryant's passing and mentioned and shared that good news. Just incredible story from Quincy Carter. So happy to hear him doing well. And Quincy, if you're watching or listening, certainly our prayers continue to be with you in the process of your recovery. Congratulations on some really great news for that. So good stuff from Quincy Carter there on that front. Really, really happy to say that 6 months clean and sober today, he said on Monday. Great thing to hear about the former Georgia quarterback, and really proud to see him doing well. Kind of a clumsy transition back to a topic we mentioned a little earlier, but I didn't want to follow up on this. When it comes to Georgia basketball, and I'm a big believer that success leaves clues. If you're on your way to being good, you'll drop some hints along the way that allow us to notice that. And for Tom Crean, you know, he certainly had a very good recruiting class into this upcoming season. But on the court, I think you want to see some example of, hey, this is something that Georgia can build on going forward. And it won't be with Ant-Man, because Ant-Man's not going to be here. It's going to be with Sahvir Wheeler when he's healthier, or some of these other players. There's still time to show something this season, but I think it's important to show that, just given the fan support this UGA basketball team has gotten. By the way, Gator Hater Updater, 1,187 days. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. And on video, it was a little bit of a long show. I was a little long-winded off the top, but I wanted to spend some time talking about some recruits, so we did that, and now we'll give you a chance. And we did talk about this during the show today, but yeah, we'll see you at 3 p.m. This afternoon for Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. Look forward to being there with you then for that. But nonetheless, we'll get a chance to give you a chance to talk here. R.S. Andrews, cool down. Appreciate you being with us. And don't forget, cold at night, cold in the morning, that means you want your heating system to be working the way that it needs to be. That's why R.S. Andrews can take good care of you. With that.